Dawn, your link to the late.
Damn it.
What else can go wrong this evening?
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away.
Take it away.
Episode 145.
And if this actually, if we could actually pull this off today, it'll be great.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. It all started because Pat has a million people coming on tonight.
It's all my fault.
And we're trying to get it to work out.
The show to end all shows.
Well, you know what? We had it all figured out and all working out, but one phone number will not work, and we're trying to rectify that right now. As you can tell, we're back on the asterisk. Link, you in there?
No, he's.
I'm here.
He's there, baby.
I'm here.
Okay, so we've got a jam-packed show, and hopefully in a few minutes we'll have another wonderful guest. But I'm not going to drop the bomb on that until Pat actually is successful in getting the guest
on.
On
me, baby.
We got a lot of hate mail this week. You read all that? Fortunately, it wasn't about our show.
That's even better.
Apparently, there were a lot of people who agree that Experts Exchange is a really, 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 really big pain in the butt. Got a lot of people, like 8 or 9 people emailed us, and there was some on the forum too, I think. They're like, yeah, I hate that Experts Exchange. It's a pain in the, it's just a real big pain. It's a nuisance. There's one guy who even knew the owner of the company, and he said it was a really nice guy. He likes it, but he absolutely hates the Experts Exchange, the company he's running. And every one of them, I followed that up with, hey, love the show. Keep up the good work. So, maybe we're doing something right that, you know, we get a little more publicity or happiness towards us than an Expert Exchange. Alan, comments? Link?
I'm just trying to get the levels set up here.
Link, comment?
You know what? I found interesting that all the people we heard from about the Expert Exchange comments, the vast majority of them were like new people that haven't written to us before, you know, who haven't sent us emails.
Right.
And there really were quite a few of them, so I was really impressed with that. And I wanted to make a comment and tell you guys, you know, if you are listening to the show, by all means, send us an email if you have, you know, comments or suggestions or stuff that you want to hear about on the show. We'd love to get your email. And it's nice for us to be able to see who's listening. So go for it.
Now, you know, I was thinking about the Experts Exchange, and, you know, I remember... About 9 or 10 years ago, I used to go to a forum called Virtual Doctor, which, you know, I thought was a pretty decent forum. And then they switched their model. I forget what they're called now. And they started going to a subscription-type service where you can subscribe for a year to be on the forum for, like, X amount of dollars. And that kind of turned me off. And I was thinking to myself, you know, what's wrong with Experts Exchange? You know, trying to make a little money and... you know, getting people who could actually make some money using their expertise in technology, which isn't really bad. But when I thought about it more, I think what is insidious about Experts Exchange is not that they're trying to make money. It's that they're actually, you know, they're really imposing their service upon you through the Google search engine. That when invariably when you search on a question that you have and Experts Exchange comes up in like the first or second hit, I think that's kind of a problem. That's like free advertising they're getting off of that. And I don't know. I don't feel too good about that.
You know, they have to be paying somebody for that kind of a response in the Google search engine.
Yeah, and it's just surprising because, you know, it's not like I'm like I don't really think I'm out there looking for a pay service. You know, it's not like I'm typing in video games, sales, or looking for a store to sell video games. I just think it's kind of, I don't know, kind of wrong. I could see that they're probably doing something to increase their hit, their page ranking in Google, and I don't think that's right. That's just me personally. I don't like that. You know, I don't mind them making a buck, but it just gets to be really annoying because, you know, you spend your time in the community, particularly like the Linux community or anything else, and, you know, you're sharing with people and they're sharing back with you. And if you have knowledge, you help this person out. And if, you know, you have a question, there's a lot of people that help you out. But when you end up going to a place and the first thing that pops up with your question is Experts Exchange and they want, you know, cash up front before they'll answer
before
your question.
Before you even do anything.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, what the heck? You know, is our guest here?
I just tried transferring him in. I don't think I did it right.
Ted, you there?
No, you did it correctly. Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there he is.
And we have right. on the phone right now, Ted Hagar, who is the proprietor of Experts Exchange. So we can send all your hate mail to him.
Yeah, send all your links and everything toward me. Ask your questions. We just cash them all up. We create a nice big list of different things, and you can ask, you know, what's the best way to scoop up the dog poop off the lawn or whatever, and, you know, we'll provide you answers for $10 a pop.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Are you familiar with the Experts Exchange website?
You know, I think you guys were talking a little bit about that last show, weren't you?
Yeah. We got a lot of hate.
Yeah.
We got a lot of people writing into us saying, yeah, we absolutely hate that site.
I've hit that site a few times, and usually I hit that site, you know, I'm not in a good case of state of sobriety or anything, and I get completely confused by it. It's like, why doesn't the links work, and what do they want money for? This is the internet.
Yeah. I know, it is, but hey.
This is the internet, not Verizon.
Ted, it's nice to have you on the show. You are the host of Novell's Open Audio, yes?
Yes, I am. I'm sitting in the studio right now, and I'm not using any of my equipment. And it's really bugging me. I wanted to record it from my side, but I didn't get a chance to.
Too late now.
No double enders.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
see, I was
what?
Hoping to gather a whole bunch of incriminating evidence against you guys on the show, and can't do it.
That's not really hard.
Listen for that.
Just listen to the archives. You know, get the hoagie guy and the
dog poop in the bag song.
Yeah, the dog. Yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff you can find.
So Ted, are you going on like the big? SLED SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop Road Tour that's going on?
You know what? I think I'm going to be on a couple of those stops. I'm not sure yet. My next little trip I'm taking is out to Guadec in Spain, which is going to be just, I think it's going to be great. But
sweet.
I don't know. Are you talking about like this 40-city tour that's coming up or something?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to the one next week, next Thursday. They have one down in King of Prussia outside of Philadelphia. I'm going to be going to that myself.
Huh.
Yeah, they do.
No, I won't be at that one. I don't even know who's presenting it.
They're doing a demo, and then they're going to have an install fest. I guess they're going to be doing an install of, like, beta versions of it, I would assume, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's we're coming up on, you know, at this point, the code is, like, so nice and tight, and it's just all about just pulling out little defects and things. The whole thing's feature complete at this point, and it's just all about grooming it and getting it ready for finalization and release.
Now, I've been running SUSE 10.1 on my main workstation. It's pretty nice overall. I like it. I'm running KDE on it. The only gripe that I have, as well as a whole bunch of other people, was the whole fiasco with the package manager updater.
Yeah, doesn't that suck?
Yeah, it this works right. I've been using Smart Package Manager, and that's been working pretty well. And I know that they issued a whole bunch of updates recently, like a week or so ago, right?
Yeah, that was like the main fix in that whole payload that they just sent out, because, I mean, if you look everywhere at all the reviews we got, everybody's just like, this is an awesome distro, it's the best thing I've seen ever, it's better than beer in a can, except for this one thing, which is was coded by Satan Incarnate or something. And so, yeah, we're well aware of it.
But you've recently switched to using Ubuntu, right?
Yeah. As a matter of, I did a download of it recently just because I wanted to check out Dapper, and it's for some reason I just haven't had a chance to get it installed at this point.
So why are you doing the Novell Open Audio Show?
Oh, why am I doing it?
I mean, how did that all? I mean, how did that come about? I mean, it's great that Novell's doing it. It's great. It's even better that they have you doing it. You do a fantastic job. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. A coworker of mine, who worked for me, actually, he was the lead marketing guy for Novell Linux Desktop 9. He was a fantastic marketing guy, unlike me, who I'm much more of, I'm a techie who happens to speak well or something, and so they put me into a marketing role back when Chris Stone was in the company. And, so this guy was working for me, and he was actually dialed into what's going on inside the industry a lot better than I was as far as what we should be doing to promote the desktop. And he wanted to do a full show all about the Linux desktop. And then a couple organizational changes happened in the company. He decided to head out to a different company, and I kind of got left with the idea of doing a podcast. And I said, why do it on just desktop? Why not do it on the whole thing? And I went through round after round of proposals and finally bought a whole bunch of equipment and said, I don't know what I'm doing, but we're going to do it. And so we gave it a shot, and the rest is I don't know, about 20 different shows of stuff we've done. So it's mostly the whole impetus behind the show, though, is really just to try to get exposure out there for some of the, we've got all these brilliant engineers here. I haven't even gotten to Nat Friedman and Miguel yet, and there's just all these guys to talk to inside this company that are just sharp, and they don't get enough exposure, so that's my job. I expose them.
My favorite segment that you did was the time where you had the problem with some articles saying that, you know, Linux was being held back by the ponytail and sandal wearing group, and then you went and called a whole bunch of people and you asked them what they were wearing and what kind of music they were listening to. And then you called Jono up in Microsoft campus, and he was saying that it looked like a Grateful Dead concert going on up there.
Yeah, that's that one has gotten us a little bit of notoriety out there. And it was one of those seat of the pants ideas, just like, oh, we're going to call a whole bunch of people and see if we have anybody who's in sandals and ponytails. I don't think the sandals and ponytail Linux developer exists.
Maybe 10 years ago.
Tom,
yeah,
what?
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
It's just kind of, you know, actually, if you look at the Sun guys, if you see the guys at Sun, there you see a lot of them that are, and I think it's really just, a lot of people think that the Linux guys are all the Unix guys, and it's not necessarily the case. It's a mixture of different people, but there's a lot of young people that are making Linux happen.
We actually know somebody who works at Sun now. Aaron Newcomb, who does the Source video show, he just started working at Sun Microsystems.
Does he have sandals or ponytail?
I don't think so.
He's a skinhead.
Not even there, see?
He's a skinhead.
Ruins the whole thing. So tell me this one. You guys,
a Sun admin, and he has sandals and ponytail.
Who is that?
That was Old Man Link.
It's a buddy of
oh,
mine.
Oh, no, no. I mean, who was it at Sun? Because I didn't actually hear it. We got a weird cutting out thing that's happening as when I stop talking, you guys don't start.
It was Aaron Newcomb.
No, when he doesn't work for Sun, but it's a buddy of mine that actually does a lot of Sun administration and different places, and he's one of those sandal-wearing hippies, too. So,
sandal-wearing hippies. Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing, though. You look at the culture that's in Linux, though, and most of the big leadership guys out there are so not what that that whole media thing was. It's just weird that even got anywhere.
But it was a good way to address the whole thing. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah. So Pat, I loved your blog post on the whole world leaders thing.
Yeah, I came up.
But I'll stay away from you.
I came up as Der Führer, but I think it's totally bogus test because Alan, who is like the most left-wing person I know, also came up as Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
So go figure.
Hey, I was JFK, baby. I'm happy with that.
You know, a buddy of mine came up with that as well. I think maybe they only have like about four different people in there, like they're still getting it going or something there, because those are the only four I've seen. Of course, I've only talked to
they had JFK,
about five or six people.
They had Saddam Hussein. Bill Clinton. Did they have Gandhi, too? They might have had Gandhi, too. I thought I might have seen that. But what was really bizarre was that when I did which old time movie you most resemble, I got Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. So Adolf Hitler, Mr. Smith, go figure.
Yeah, how are those two
government.
Compatible in any way?
Exactly.
Things in government.
There's a Mother Teresa, apparently. Gorkon got Mother Teresa.
Don't call Mother Teresa.
And Vogatier got Abe Lincoln.
There you go. So there are other ones.
I'm so sure. how many people, if I may ask, how many people do you guys get listening on your live show versus people that download later?
That's a good question.
Definitely more that download later.
Yeah, we got a couple, usually a couple thousand downloads at least. And live, I have no idea because we have a couple different mirrored feeds and we don't really track any of them.
Hmm.
I think we're...
Go ahead.
About at least, all right, I'd say at least 15 people listen live, at least. But there could be a lot more than that. Now I'm curious, so I'll have to go hit some websites.
I love that. 15. Yeah, that sounds like the number of people that read my blog.
I think it's slightly more than 15. Dan is trying to downplay it.
Listen to us live?
I listen to us live.
Oh.
We've got more than that. On the IRC, we average anywhere between 40 and 50 people, usually.
Now, whether they're all listening to us, I don't know.
That's true. Because we got Virtual Dan sitting there and a couple other ones, too. Yeah, right now,
Virtual Dan.
Right now,
does it fart, too?
No. We've got 35 in the RC right now. That'll go up, I'm sure, as it goes along. Ted, are you still there? You're awfully quiet now.
Oh, yeah. It's because this phone keeps cutting in and out, so every time I start to talk, one of you guys starts talking, and then I back off. And so I thought I'd just listen for a moment before barging in again, because I feel like I might have been talking over you guys a few times.
Yeah, you know what the issue is a lot of times? We come up with compression on both ends that kind of compete with each other, and they kind of negate each other sometimes. We've had that sometimes. You know, someone's on it like someone's on a wireless, or they're on VoIP, and it just you know, the quality just sucks sometimes, and there's not much you can do about it, you know?
You know what it is? It's all Pat's fault. That's what it is.
Yeah, I was grossly underestimating, and from the two mirrors that I can check, there's a combined total of 45 people listening live.
Hello, everybody.
And that's only two of our live mirrors, right?
Yeah.
So we probably have, you know, 50, 60 people live easy.
So that's TLLTS.org and BinRev.
Then you got the Canadian Techie Mirror.
Yep.
Yeah, buddy.
Well, that's actually pretty cool then that you guys get that, because you guys are on every week, right?
Yeah.
Every week.
That's right on. That's nice. That's nice to know that many people, you know, will actually even make the time, you know, just to listen.
Yeah.
We appreciate that.
We have at least one person that's a truck driver that just pulls over to the side of the road to listen to us every week live, so.
Is that because it's like not safe to continue driving your truck while listening to TLLS?
Probably not.
He needs an access point. What it is?
Yeah, that's probably true. There,
pulling over looking for a Panera. You know?
Did you guys get a chance to see my 15 minutes of fame this weekend?
No.
Which one? You post on Dig?
Oh yeah, that was it was really a weird thing. I had 19,000 hits on my blog, so it flatlined every other day of my blog all of a sudden, and it was one of those really weird things, because I usually post my blog for people that I know will be reading it, and it was somehow picked up on Dig and, you know, just slammed. And it was only just I was talking about the main menu in SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop 10, and it just bonfired out of control on Dig, weird comments and everything.
Well, it's at least you know that people are interested in what you're writing about every once in a while.
But you know, it's a funny thing though, because there's this strange phenomenon. I was just reading somebody's blog post about advocacy and how advocacy's really kind of deteriorated in Linux, which I don't really believe that much. I actually posted about it on my blog as well. I don't believe that that's the case, but he did a good job of identifying the different kinds of trolls out there. And I got to see, like, all of his you know, his taxonomy of trollishness out there by some of the dig comments, because nobody asked me questions about the post. They mostly just bickered about it and made accusations in dig. And it was really, it's an odd thing to have that happen, you know, where you kind of, where's the conversation part of it?
You know, and speaking of that, you know, with the Novell Open Audio, your blog and everything, what is your ratio of, you know, positive email, positive feedback to negative criticism?
Hate mail.
Or, you know, well, I don't want to say positive, you know, criticism by itself isn't necessarily negative, but what's your ratio of positive, you know, criticism to, quote, hate mail?
Are you meaning, like, for the podcast or on the blog?
You know, either one. Okay, let's go with the podcast. Do you get a lot of... I hear some of the email you read on the show, or you used to, and it's, you know, pretty positive. Do you get a lot of hate mail, too?
You know, I don't get a lot of hate mail on it, because, you know, most people are... If they don't like the podcast, and they don't like the style, and I definitely tend to have a polarizing style, you either think I'm like full of crap and just like some marketing wonk, or you realize that it's just who I am. And I get comments mostly from people saying, hey, keep up the good work. We want to hear this. We want to hear that. And those are really cool things when I get those. The main negative thing I get is our audio quality has not been good enough, and people cannot constantly tell us, you know, that they're turning up the volume and then the next segment comes in and it just blasts their ears. And so, I apologize if any of my listeners are listening to this tonight. I'm sorry for having bad audio quality.
Well, we wouldn't know anything about audio quality issues.
Our audio quality is perfect.
Yeah, we were going to complain about your audio quality there for a little bit. We just...
shall we? Have at it, guys.
Yeah. You know what? Are you doing... what are you using to do the show, then? Are you doing all straight Linux?
You know, I want to. I've been following a project called FreeBob and waiting for that project to get mature enough. But no, I couldn't get my mixing equipment and stuff on there. So I'm sitting in front of a machine I can't even use. I brought up a browser on it. I don't even know how to open up new tabs in it. I finally figured that out tonight. But I'm sitting in front of a Macintosh machine that I've got a sound guy that works on now. So yeah,
have your own sound guy?
Can you believe that? Yeah, but he's part-time sound guy and part-time web monkey here at Novell. So he kind of plays a lot of different games here.
Yeah, we're firing our sound guy.
Really?
Goodbye, Alan.
How much were you paying?
Yeah, because I get paid so much for it.
No, he does a good job.
He does a sound, and then he gives foot rubs to Dan and Link after the show.
No.
So you have how many guys working on your show then? You and...
Well, the show's pretty much my show. It's Novell's show. I shouldn't say it's my show, but it's pretty much my editorial content that's in the show. I come up with most of the stuff that goes in it. I've got awesome help from a buddy of mine who happens to work here at Novell as well, a guy named Aaron Quill. You hear him on the show a lot of times, like he was on the Jeremy Allison interview with me. And, he's mostly, the guy who tells me, no, that's stupid, or, yeah, you should do that, or you need to change this. So he's kind of like he gives me a little bit of executive editorial oversight. And then I've got one audio guy. And then from there, we got a couple people that we use from time to time to do some interviews, just because I get sick of hearing my own voice in the edits and want somebody else to talk most of the time. But it's pretty much a skeleton crew thing. It's a real shoestring project, actually.
So you're not that far off from what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you guys actually have four likable people, whereas my show just has me, and that's a little irritating. But, you know, we work with what we've got.
Do we have a third person in this conference?
Yes, I think our Gen 2 guys are jumping in.
Do we have Gen 2 guys in the conference?
Yes, I'm Seamoth from Gen 2.
Hey, Seamoth.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, it's
we can hear you perfectly.
Oh, great. I'm going to apologize in advance for any noise. I'm actually on the street in Boston, so I'm trying to get to somewhere quiet.
Hey, good luck. I was on the street in Boston a few weeks ago, and I got lost.
Daniel hung over after he went out with Jeremy from LinuxQuestions.org.
Crazy place. Cement, you are currently on with also on the asterisk is Ted Hagar from Novell Open Audio and Link Fezzenden from our show, because he's got to get up early tomorrow. So Ted, are you still there, Ted?
Yo,
I am. You're welcome to continue hanging out. I'm gonna have Pat introduce our new guest because it's rolling into their time. So it's up to you to hang on, you know, hang out with us, and that's no problem. But I just
got an hour drive to do right now, actually, to get home for the evening, and my wife is here at Novell. She's an employee here as well, and is waiting for me.
Ah, the evil
so,
eye.
So in order to not have to go home to the doghouse, I'll probably take my leave right now.
Give her the keys and hang out.
you can put her on, too.
All right, Ted, thank you very much. We'll have to get you on again.
We'll talk again, Ted.
Hey, you bet, guys. Just let me know when you want me on the show anytime but next week, and I'll be happy to jump on.
You bet.
Have fun in Barcelona.
Thanks. Take it easy.
Have a good show tonight.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. Sorry there, Cement.
We got Cement Colleen from the Gen 2 project.
Yes.
And did a fourth person just jump in?
I think somebody else jumped in, too.
This is Grant Goodyear.
Grant Goodyear. Wow, they're just coming. People are just coming in and disappearing. That's great. Pat, introduce our guests from Gen 2, because this is going to be some good stuff.
Okay, we got Cement Colleen and Grant Goodyear from the Gen 2 project. Guys, welcome to the show.
Good evening.
We're really glad you're here.
We've been looking forward
to talking to Gen 2 Project for a long time. So just give
it's
us a little
pleasure to be here.
Just give us a little introduction, what you guys do in the Gen 2 Project.
Go first, Grant.
Okay. My name's Grant Goodyear. My handle in Gen 2 is G2 Bujum. I am nominally the president of the Gen 2 Foundation, and I spend my time doing basic development, taking care of various bits of IP, intellectual property details, and every now and then just trying to make sure the whole show goes in the right direction.
And I'm Cement, Cement Colleen, and I actually joined after Grant, but we're both old-timers in the project. I'm also on I'm on the board of trustees for the Gen 2 Foundation. I mainly deal with lawyers these days on behalf of the foundation to get all our paperwork done. And I'm also on the Gen 2 Council, which is actually more on the technical side, where it's a council of 7 people, and I think Mike is going to join us from there as well. And we help to set the technical direction of Gen 2.
So how big is the Gen 2 project? How many active developers and team members you guys actually have?
Well, gosh, I want to say that we have over 300 developers at the moment. As for the user base, Grant, do you have any idea of that?
I don't think anybody has an actual good idea. It's certainly well over 10,000 and somewhere probably less than 250,000, and no one actually knows what the number is in between.
One of the things I noticed about the Gen 2 project is every year at like the Linux World Expo, you guys have the most popular booth, it seems. You always have a big crowd of people standing around the booth and checking out what you guys are up to. It seems it's been like that since I can remember. What is it about Gen 2 that makes it exciting to people?
My feeling is it's the people and it's the attitude of Gen 2, which is that we want to make a distribution that people can use however they want, and we'll do our best to teach you how to do that.
Yeah, I think Grant's onto something there. I think it's, at least I can speak from my experience as a user, it's very empowering to use Gen 2. And, you know, whether or not that's real or as far as how much empowered you are, that's a very subjective thing. But, you know, when you're using Gen 2 and when you first install it and you're just slapped right into the console and you have to issue all these commands, I mean, your Linux experience starts right there, so just from the get-go. And I think people take pride in being able to go through that sort of difficult install process and come out of it on the other side with a fully running Linux install. And I think that's sort of formed the basis of the user community. They go through this experience and then they want others to do it, so they get all very excited about it. So really, I would say it's our users who built our community. I mean, they evangelize us all over the place.
Yeah, you guys definitely have a great community. I mean, I've gone on the bulletin boards, the Gentoo.org bulletin boards, and it's always very active. There's always people on there helping each other out. It seems it's very positive. You don't get the whole RTFM, you know. You don't see that. You see people trying to help each other. And that's yeah. It's very positive,
Well, thank you. We'd certainly do our best on that.
Yes, we do.
a lot of people also rave about your IRC chat rooms, if you have a problem, you can jump on there, and people are always willing to help you out.
Well, that actually is usually the first stop. The IRC chat rooms actually predated our own bulletin boards and our forums. I remember when I was a user and I hopped in there and Grant was one of the operators in there being helpful to all the users, which at the time I think we were only 12 users, but, since the beginning, that's just how the attitude has been, is that, we're all sort of Linux people and to a greater or lesser degree and, we've got to help each other.
It helps to remember that Gentoo was started by a very small number of people trying to build a fairly large object known as the Linux distribution. And none of us had any money to play with it either, so IRC was free and it was available. Mailing lists were essentially free and available, and everything built up from there. So our history, you can still see that legacy. IRC is still where almost all of our discussions happen that are actually useful. A lot of stuff happens on the mailing list, but if you need something now, you go to IRC.
Now, one of the things that makes Gentoo different than any other Linux distribution is that you guys are a source-based distribution. Where was the inspiration that came from? Was it BSD?
Well, the person who really was at the forefront of that was Daniel Robbins, the original chief architect of Gentoo, and he stole it from the BSDs, from FreeBSD and OpenBSD. I don't think he actually used NetBSD to any significant extent, but the system there is very similar to the others, and it provided great flexibility. At the time, every Linux distribution out there had this amazing problem with dependency nightmares. You wanted to download a new RPM or a new deb file, and suddenly you realized you needed 32 other things that were exactly a particular library. When you compile from source, a lot of those problems go away, made life much simpler.
Now, when you guys have the install process, you have a stage 1, a stage 2, and a stage 3. What are the differences between the three stages?
Well, I would probably classify stage 1 as probably the user favorite. That's the one that gets people all excited, because that's the most minimal stage that we offer. It's just a command prompt, and from there on you have to read docs and do a whole lot of stuff to get your Linux system up and running. Stage 2 is slightly less work, but it's along the same idea. And then stage 3 is almost a fully functioning system. You have to compile your kernel sources, and at that point you're also able to download binary packages and install those as well. So stage 3 is probably the quickest method of installing, but stage 1 historically has remained our most popular way of installing.
And to some extent, stage 1 is the most flexible. Now, that said, we've actually been trying to get as many people as possible to start from stage 3, and the reason is that the core operating system that you build up in a stage 3 has a lot of interdependencies between those core packages, between the compiler, between Flex, between Lex, all of those different fundamental core items, it's tricky managing to get the order just right so you get this package installed and then use that package to bootstrap the next one. And what we've discovered over the last year or so is that if people happen to pick particularly unfortunate combinations of compiler options, what we call use flags, they can end up getting into a situation where that build order isn't quite right. So what we're suggesting now is that people start from the stage 3 and then they make their customizations afterwards. They rebuild everything from that point, essentially.
Have you guys done any performance tests to see the differences between the three different types of stage installs to see if there's much impact as far as speed from one to the other?
I have seen some people who've done, I've seen some benchmarks on the web, but I've never actually run any, so I don't have firsthand knowledge there.
Theoretically, there is actually no difference, but I guess that remains to be tested.
So what you guys are saying is there's a lot of people out there that say, Gen 2 is the reason you run Gen 2 is that it's tuned specifically for your system, and you're gonna, get the best performance out of it you possibly can. That's not really necessarily the case. There's no hard data to back that up.
We've never claimed that to be the case. However, they're right in one sense, and that sense is what Grant alluded to earlier when he mentioned use flags, That's really the advantage of source distribution, in my opinion, because with these use flags, you're given the power to customize every single package the way you want it. So, for example, I personally don't use the KDE desktop, and a lot of packages out there come with support for KDE or Qt or Arch, and in my use flag, I just minus those three items out, and no matter what I install, I don't get the support for them because I just don't want or need them. So it's the use flags really that make a Gen 2 system unique and separate from anybody else.
So you in a sense you strip out a lot of bloat and unnecessary dependencies for stuff you're not going to really
Correct.
Use.
Exactly.
Which in turn
exactly.
theoretically would make stuff run a little better.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Better in the sense that, you just have less bloat, less disk being used. Of course, these days, all this stuff is cheap. Disk space is not an expensive thing anymore. But it does certainly apply, we have a great project called the Embedded Project, where, when Mike Freisinger comes along later, he'll probably go into that a bit. But they build Gen 2 on tiny, tiny devices. And that's where use flags come in really, really handy because all the bloat is gone. You have a completely streamlined system.
And that is nice. Now, I have a question for you. Since you guys are on the technical end of Gen 2, I ran Gen 2 on a PPC platform for a little while, and it was really nice. I really liked it. The only problem I had with trying to maintain the system... it seemed an awful lot of work, and what got a little frustrating after a while is after you've done some updates and maybe a couple weeks of updates, that number of files that needs to be edited in your Etsy directory keeps growing and growing and growing. And I always wonder, if it knows it has to edit 121 files, why doesn't it tell me which ones I need to fix?
Oh, it does.
It does?
There are several different commands that you can run that will go through and iterate through all of those different ones one by one, let you know what's changed, and let you either make easy changes or just accept the new version or the old version.
I should have read the docs a little more closely.
Dan, how typical of you.
I know.
Actually, we have two great tools that come to mind. One is the standard one. It's called etc-update, or etc-update, however you pronounce that. The one that I prefer is called dispatch-conf. And the nice thing about that second tool is that it actually creates a little RCS archive in those directories so that you can always back out your changes.
Now, I see a lot of companies out there that are using Gentoo as virtual servers and doing hosting on virtual servers, Gentoo virtual servers. I know some companies that are actually producing CMS systems that they're using Gentoo with. When a company uses Gentoo as their operating system, do you ever see any financial support from these companies? I mean, have they been good to give you guys a little financial support, or is it just all strictly community generated?
It is almost entirely community generated. Now, it's entirely possible we have that we have companies giving us money, donating through PayPal, and if we sift through all of them, we may notice. But you know, we tend to get a lot of wonderful small donations, and we don't really necessarily notice who every single person is, where they're coming from. So, you know, it's certainly possible we're getting money from big corporations and just haven't noticed.
And I do know that some companies will sometimes approach individual developers for specific work and maybe bring them on, you know, for small contracts here and there. But we haven't in the last couple of years had any large donations.
All right.
I should mention that, as a matter of fact, our biggest donation is by Open Source Labs, which has provided a huge amount of bandwidth and server space and equipment for us. And we've also had some companies like NVIDIA and others that have actually donated equipment for us to test on. So we've had a fair amount of equipment and facilities donated, but not so much actual cash.
And that's important when you're you know, maintaining a distribution with a package repository and as large as Gentoo.
Absolutely. We are incredibly grateful.
Absolutely. And the other nice thing, just to expand on the NVIDIA bit for a bit, NVIDIA actually gives us access to hardware that's forthcoming. So it kind of helps us, you know, look forward to what sort of problems users might have and start some roads to fixing that, you know, even before it hits.
Well, that's nice. I never heard anybody else mention that NVIDIA was doing that for them.
Oh yeah, well, we love NVIDIA. They seem to love us. It's a good relationship so far.
That's good. That is good. So now the packages in the Gentoo portage system. Do you guys actually host the source code for all those packages, or do you just link to where the source code of the packet, you know, of that specific software is being maintained?
We provide a mirror of almost all the source code. There are some packages, such as Sun's Java, that we are not allowed to host ourselves. They require a click-through license of some sort to download the package. But for all other sources, we actually maintain a mirror so that if the original repository should suddenly decide they don't want to have that version anymore, we still have it available.
Uh-huh. So, is that also with regards to, like, the Windows codec package for mPlayer and stuff like that, and the libDVD CSS? Is that stuff that you guys don't host yourself?
Let's see. There are some things that we don't host ourselves. We simply link to the original sites. I don't happen to know if either of those fall under that category.
Yeah, I actually don't know offhand.
So what's the Gentoo community stance on non-free software? Like, for example, I think Pine is not under the GPL. How do you guys handle that?
Well, in principle, we have a license in every e-build, and one of these years we'll actually have the ability for Portage or whatever package manager we have to restrict what you download according to that license. We don't have that yet. It's been in our pipeline now for the last couple of years.
So you're actually looking to put kind of like the brakes on some of this stuff so that they're not getting non-free software?
Actually, no. We want to leave it up to the users.
Oh, okay.
We want to make it so that if a user doesn't want non-free software, it's easy for them not to install it.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, all right. I see what you're saying. So you're doing license, kind of like license checking, not to prevent people, but to allow people to make the decision for themselves and not not accidentally get something if they don't agree with the license.
Right.
That's good. That's cool. Now, it sounded like you said Portage or whatever package management system you're using. Are you migrating to a different package management system or looking at different ones?
We're trying to make our system sufficiently flexible that if someone else wants to write a new package manager that will work with all of our e-builds, then they can. Then a user can use that. And so there are two different groups right now who are working on their versions of a package manager, plus we still have people working on developing Portage.
So Portage is great. I really liked Portage. It's flexible. It almost seems, why would you want anything else? But what are these other package managers that they're trying to put together? I mean, what separates those from Portage?
In some cases, the languages used or the algorithms or, in fact, what the Portage team itself is trying to do right now is rewriting sections just to make the code a little more maintainable. The original Portage code was developed very quickly, and it does wonderful things, but trying to go in and actually change that code is not so easy.
And yeah, you must realize that, we have our package format already in terms of e-build and even the binary package format. And so these other implementations are actually adhering to, and they're helping us write a standard for that. So it's not like we're switching away from the nature of the package management. We're just we may switch implementations, if that makes sense.
Oh, that makes sense.
So ideally, other than what the actual word is the user types at the command line, things won't change very much.
Okay. I know we're supposed to get two other members.
Yeah, Mike
of the team
is supposed to come on.
Yeah, I think Mike Freisinger said he was coming on over Skype.
Yeah, unfortunately,
and,
we have a little issue with Skype and Asterisk at the same time.
I see.
Are you guys both staying on? Were you planning on both staying on?
It depends. I was under the impression you had a limit of two people, so we can certainly go away and let the others come on.
No, I have your numbers, and I have it set up that I can call you guys, and I can probably have all four of you on at the same time. And
want to try that?
I don't want to, cut you guys off, but I know these other two guys are supposed to. I don't know what time Pat had said to these guys.
He said
nine. Supposed to be on. Oh, nine? Are all four of them supposed
nine.
To be on at nine?
I think all four of us are actually ready, so.
All right. How about we get off of this, and then we'll call you guys all up.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to call you guys.
Okay.
And it'll just take a minute, and that way we'll get all four of you on, because I don't want to.
Leave them out of the conversation.
Leave those guys out, and I don't want to cut off talking with you guys. So give me a minute, and I'll call you right back.
All right, excellent.
All right.
Bye.
You got everybody's number, Dan?
Do I have everybody's number?
Yeah, I sent you
Yeah, I already have it all set up.
All right, fire it up.
Which is a surprise when they showed up in the asterisk. It's a good thing that we were on there.
Well, my internet connection was actually down when I came home from work. Speaking of internet connection, it looks like I'm going to be switching my ISP. What do you mean again?
I thought you switched it already.
No, I haven't done it yet already. What happened was where I live, it's a fairly new development. Apple gay sound effects. I live in a new development, and the only internet.
No, that was a Skype sound effect.
That's fruity, man. That's Skype on Apple.
No, I don't get that noise on mine.
No, it must be a new version.
It's got to be Dan.
It's a new version. Anyway, long story short was there was only one provider in my neighborhood. So now there are other options now. There's another cable company that's come in. And I can also get Speakeasy DSL in there too. So the cheapest deal is with the new cable company. What they, a lot of these cable companies do, that they offer bundled services. They'll give you internet, phone, cable TV. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a bundled service with the phone and the internet, and it's roughly going to be half the price what I'm paying now.
Plus, who are we just on? Cement and...
It's Cement and...
was it Mike? Michael Cummings or...
No, Mike is who's, who we're going to bring him in.
Grant Goodyear?
We had Grant on.
Okay, I'm going to pull those two guys in first, okay. And then I'm going to call the other two individually.
Okay.
Hopefully this will work and not explode. Oh, listen to that. I should have just called them individually.
Just turn down the volume, too.
Hi, Grant.
Hello.
Hi, Grant.
This is Grant.
And Cement?
Yep, this is me.
Okay. I wanted to call you two guys first because you've already been on with us, and I'm going to pull those other two, Mike and Mike, in individually so
okay.
We don't give them, like, a shock all of a sudden.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to pull in Mike Cummings next, and it should be connecting. Fingers crossed. Dun, dun. Mike?
Hey, kids.
Hey, Mike, yes. How you doing?
All right. Just realizing there's a time delay on this.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. We have Grant and Cement and Link on right now, and we have one more person to pull in.
Hi there, Mike. Hey, how's it going? Good, how are you? All right.
Well, one thing I got to say about the Gen 2 project, guys, is the documentation on the Gen 2 website is top-notch. I think it's second to none for any Linux distribution that's out there. So I just want to give you guys credit. You know, fantastic job on that.
Oh, wait, now you're going to have to give credit again because we still got one more person to pull in.
Okay.
All right, Mike, just so you know, we are live right now, okay?
Yep.
All right, and I'm going to be pulling in Mike Freisinger. Wait a minute. Link, I got to hang up on you a minute.
Okay.
Not you guys.
Okay.
I don't think I'm going to be able to add Link to the conference.
That's his fault for not being here.
What do you mean? We can't get five people on here?
I don't think we can. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
This is Dan from the Linux Link Tech Show. I want to let you know that you are live right now, also with Grant Cement and Mike Cummings.
Oh, you were able to get more than two calls going, huh?
Well, we found a way to get it accomplished
so far.
Yeah, and hopefully this is all going to work out. We've been talking with Cement and Grant for a little bit now, and you know, we just pulled. Sorry for the delay in pulling you guys in.
No problem.
And, all right. Pat, why don't you introduce our other two guests that we have in here now?
We got Mike Cummings and Mike Freisinger. I guess, guys, just give us a little background on what you guys do with the Gen 2 project. What's your involvement?
You want to go first, Mike? Sure. I don't know. I kind of do a bit of everything. Try to do the stuff that nobody else wants to do, but really needs to get done. So I like to work on things like glibc, you know, GCC, and some of the game stuff, more of the embedded architectures. Just some of the things that we tend to be short on developers. So that's generally what I do.
And Mike, what do you do with the project?
Well, I actually only have one real main area that I end up spending most of my time on, and that's maintaining the Perl tree. Both the installation of Perl and all the modules you get with Gen 2, plus anything written in Perl and Gen 2 usually ends up going by the Perl team.
Now, is your job with maintaining the Perl stuff, do you try and get as many modules as possible for Perl, or is the idea that, you know, you get the base Perl package and then you use CPAN to get whatever Perl modules you want on your own?
Well, we'd rather not duplicate CPAN. We have about 600 or so modules in the tree right now. Yeah, I mean, you don't get them when you first install, but I mean, it's nothing but a hop, skip, and a jump to actually install them. Plus, we have a tool called GCPAN, which lets you install a module that's not in Portage, but that will generate an e-build so that Portage can track it for you, and it works about 85-95% of the time. And then after that, yeah, you're probably going to have to use CPAN if the above two methods didn't work.
Yeah, no problem. So you got your work cut out for you, because there's Perl 6 coming on the horizon, I think.
And we do have Pugs and Parrot support in the tree right now, which is the emulators for attacking how Perl 6 is actually going to work.
Uh-huh. That's a lot of work, man.
I have a question for you guys. The Gen 2 installer, that's all scripts. What kind of scripts are that? Are those Perl scripts, Python scripts?
They're Bash scripts, actually, last I checked.
So which installer are we talking about here?
The Gen 2 installer.
Like the pretty one?
The new one.
Yeah, the newer one.
Yeah, that's mostly written in Python, but like on the back end aside. And then I think they've abstracted it out so the front end can actually be, you know, a variety of things, whether it be, you know, like dialogue with end curses or GTK with, you know, GNOME. But like the back end is mostly Python.
So you guys, we already talked with Grant and Cement about their length and experience in the Gen 2 project. How long have you guys, Michael and Mike, been with the Gen 2 project?
I've been with...
You want to go?
Yeah.
We'll start with you, Michael. Go ahead.
So who's going by Michael?
Michael.
We'll start with you, Michael Cummings. How about that?
Or, I joined up with Gen 2 right about after 1.0 release candidate 6. So how many ever years ago that was? Is that 4 years now? Maybe less? I can't tell time. I have a computer.
And then Mike Freisinger, how long have you been with it, the project?
You know, probably about the same time. I think that was back in 2002. Is actually about the time that I think both Cummings and I both joined at the same time back in 2002.
Sounds about right.
Now, are all you guys employed as developers, or are you like computer engineers or programmers or in your day job?
You want me to go first?
Actually,
again?
No. I'm a physicist.
Okay.
I'm the odd person out, however.
And that's you, Grant, right?
Yes.
And then
sorry.
Michael Cummings, you are a developer?
No, I run a web server farm.
Oh.
So not quite development, but hosting.
And you're doing hosting on Gen 2?
No. I don't get to choose my hosting platform.
And then Mike Freisinger, what do you do in the day job?
I actually just changed jobs about a month and a half ago. Before that, I was a VB6 programmer for a few years. And fortunately, I was able to get out of that, so now I'm working on embedded Blackfin stuff.
Wow. So you got a pretty diverse bunch of guys here, the three of you. Whole lot of different experience coming in. Has it been, have you had a lot of, obviously you've had a lot of positive experiences working in the Gen 2 community. Have there been any difficulties that you've experienced with this type of project along the way?
Well, I like to say that we have over 300 developers, which means on any given day, one of them's having a bad day. And so you simply have a large project that occasionally has the occasional bit of sniping. Things work pretty well, but if you're going to take things personally, it's not a fun place to be all the time.
All right. So we can understand that. Now, one of the questions coming in from our IRC is they're interested about the Sunrise project. Can you give us a little bit of an idea, our listeners, exactly what the Sunrise project is and the goals of the Sunrise project?
Hey, C-Matt, you want to field that one? Is he here?
I only know...
You know what? I think he dropped off. He was having some connection issues.
He was on a cell phone.
Okay, Spanky, I think you should take that one then.
I'll see what I can do. The Sunrise Project is kind of in debate right now in terms of implementation, but the general idea is to kind of open up our development community more to the users to try and get them to, you know, kind of lower the requirement for people to be able to contribute back to us. Because right now, in order for you to actually get something back into the, you know, the Gentoo portage tree, it's actually quite a bit of work for you to become a developer, go through our recruiting process, and then actually get commit access and start doing your work. For a lot of guys, you know, they just don't want to go through all that. They'd just rather, you know, commit from time to time and then, I mean, contribute from time to time and go about their business. But the Sunrise Project was kind of started to try and address this where, you know, lower the bar for users to be able to give back to us. The actual details about how we're going about that are still in the air. We're still hashing that out on the, you know, our developer list. Some of our, on our developer list. Does that cover it, or
no? No, I see what you're saying. So, Gentoo, having been, you know, is a fairly mature project. It's been going on for quite a while. You have a large contributor base. So what it almost sounds like you're saying is for people who want to jump in and start contributing and working on packages, that the system that's in place now is kind of is cumbersome or not as conducive to having these people jump in right away. They have to jump through a bunch of hoops. And the Sunrise Project is set up to alleviate some of those hurdles?
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal of the Sunrise Project at this time. And the other thing is that, you know, once you become a developer, the idea is that you'll be sticking around for a while, you'll be fielding bug reports, you know, just generally maintaining a bunch of packages. And, again, you know, there's a lot of people who just don't want that. They just want to contribute the occasional fix and then just keep using Gentoo for fun. And just, you know, our development style at this time just isn't really conducive to that sort of contributions. So oftentimes they'll find that users will jump on the, you know, our Bugzilla is our main entry point for, you know, user-to-developer interaction. And, you know, people will file a bug. Some other users may contribute, you know, like a fix or some changes. But then if there's no developer, developers are overloaded, you know, those changes can often just sit on Bugzilla for quite a while. And users just get the feeling that, you know, they're not getting any feedback or, you know, their changes are going unnoticed or their contributions. So Sunrise is kind of trying to be developed to, you know, address all these concerns.
So a lot of Gentoo users that I've come in contact with are really avid Gentoo users. They love it. They're really, you know, into the project. It's kind of like, you know, a lot of Slackware users I come into. They're really rabid Slackware fans. Given that, in my experience with the Gentoo user base, is it more frequent to see like a person who's going to contribute and develop for Gentoo that they really stick around and participate, and you don't have as many developers just like dropping off and packages not being maintained? That has that been a problem or not so much?
Well, it happens, but I mean, I wouldn't say it's a problem, you know. People grow, the people change, you know.
fumbling for words for this.
I mean, a lot of the users, too, it kind of gets back to the Sunrise thing, is where, you know, they're avid Gentoo users, and they really like using it, but they don't want to kind of go up to being a developer where, you know, all they do is develop all the time. So we see that's what a lot of our user base, I think, you know, is also consists of.
And our developer base also has a very high turnover. A lot of the people who develop for us are doing so in their spare time or in college, and eventually they get to a point where they fall in love, get married, get a job that requires more time, or just get tired and decide they want to do something else. So we end up having a lot of people coming in and out all the time. And we've set the bar fairly high for what it takes to actually become a Gentoo developer, because one of the long-standing philosophies behind Gentoo development is that every Gentoo developer that works with eBuilds can change essentially anything in the tree if they need to. They need to ask permission if they're going to be dealing with something that is someone's personal pet project. But in general, every developer has an amazing amount of power to make things better. But it also means that someone could come in and be extremely malicious and cause real problems. So we actually have a fairly intensive how to become a dev process that ensures that the people who are joining us are actually people who want to help us.
Now, aside from developers, your documentation being top-notch that it is, I mean, some of the best around, is that documentation put together by the community also?
We are perfectly happy to let everybody know that our documentation developers are developers in the same vein as anybody else in Gentoo. They have just as many privileges and rights. We couldn't do anything near as impressive as what we do without them. So they're essentially people from the community who decided that they're good at that sort of thing, and they've contributed.
Yeah, because that is something. Your documentation is spectacular.
I also find that there's a lot of users, too, for translation. Is that, you know, they'll translate a document, and then it'll just go through Bugzilla, and then, you know, a developer will check it and, you know, basically merge it in, but... a lot of our translation, you know, is coming from the community. We just don't have, like, the developers to translate all these languages all the time.
Now, you had mentioned that you guys get to work pretty closely with NVIDIA, and they are pretty supportive of the Gentoo project. Are you guys able to forge other relationships like that with other hardware developers? Are you making any headway with some of the wireless chipset providers?
We do have some of that. It tends not to be as Gentoo. That tends to be Gentoo developers who have decided that they're really interested in this particular embedded device or this particular wireless device. And then they approach the companies that have them and have started working on them. We haven't really had a good Gentoo-fronted endeavor to try to make those sorts of connections.
Okay, you know what? And maybe, you know, when I think about that question again, I'm saying, well, you know, that seems like it would be more of kernel developers trying to forge those relationships. And not to say that there might not be, you know, there aren't any kernel developers that are also working on the Gentoo project, but I was just curious because you guys had that relationship with NVIDIA.
Mm-hmm. Grant, I have a question for you. So you're a physicist. Have you used Gentoo for clustering at all?
I actually haven't, but we have an entire group of people who work on keeping a Gentoo clustering project going that have used it that have actually used it quite successfully. The reason that I started using Gentoo in the first place is a very similar reason. I wanted a system that was as minimal and streamlined as possible just to run scientific jobs on. but I'm not as familiar with the clustering stuff as Spiderus and some of our other developers.
Now, it seems Gen 2 is being ported to all different platforms and everything. I would assume x86 would probably be the most popular one. There's also PPC. What are some of the other platforms that it's currently running on?
I think actually AMD 64 is, I would venture to say that, you know, it's just as popular as x86 nowadays, especially like in the Gen 2 world. But in terms of like architectures Gen 2 runs on, pretty much if you have a, you know, a MMU will run on it. You know, we just list off the architectures real quick, or?
But go right ahead.
I mean, we've got active teams for the Alpha, AMD 64, PA RISC, Itanium, MIPS, PPC, PPC 64, Spark, x86. And then I wouldn't say they're nearly as active, but I've got some ports going for ARM, the S390, Super H, and there's a fellow helping me out trying to get the M68K going. But, yeah.
Now, are you the one that's in charge of maintaining the ports to the different architectures?
It's really, you know, a guy who wants to do an architecture port, and, you know, he just becomes a lead just because he wants to do it. In my case, I'm sort of the lead for a bunch of architectures because nobody else really cares about them.
So you must have quite a collection of systems over there, then, that you're testing this stuff out on.
Yeah, I got a lot of computers in my room.
Guy should have got Link on board. He had a museum of old machines.
Yeah. So how is the embedded marketplace? You had mentioned that doing some work on Gen 2 and the embedded devices. How is that market taking to using Gen 2 for embedded Linux architectures?
The cross-compiling stuff I've all just been kind of doing in my spare time for the fun of it. To be honest, I actually have no idea how many people are, you know, using this. It tends to be like when at Linux World or wherever somebody will hop in and be like, you know, I tried using this on, you know, this product and stuff. And I'll be like, well, shit, I didn't even realize people are actually using this for real work. I've gotten some feedback, you know, in the MIPS and the ARM world. On people actually using this stuff, but I can't give you any like real hard numbers or anything.
So then, what I seem to be hearing is you guys are contributing to the Gen 2 project on your spare time as a love for the project, and not necessarily using it in your day-to-day business lives. Correct?
Pretty much.
And
yep.
And
I actually do use it in my day-to-day business life, but my needs are pretty simple. So, you know, I'm not doing clustering. I'm just doing running scientific jobs on single machines most of the time. But I'm one of the rare people actually is allowed to use Gen 2 in their day job.
Oh, yeah, okay. So,
and we have a desktop implementation at my office. We just can't use it for the servers.
Okay. And is the reason that, I mean, what do you think is a stickler point there for not using Gen 2 on the servers? Is it, you know, like support contracts and stuff like that?
For where I work, it is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
our management needs.
Sorry, you want to go?
I was just going to say, our management needs to be able to, have that warm fuzzy that they can get someone on the phone in 10 minutes and have someone come down to fix a problem, and yeah, which is why it's a Solaris job, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, that tends to be what I hear from people, too, is that corporations don't really invest in Linux unless, you know, there's a support contract, somebody they can call up and blame and, you know, make sure that it's going to get fixed in timely, you know, in a timely fashion. I'm not really aware of any Gen 2 people doing, you know, such contract work. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if there was such a company doing the work, but, you know, in general, there isn't a large support for such a thing. So, Gentoo, you know, loses out on that in the server corporate environment just for that reason alone.
Now, well, since you guys work in different environments and maybe have different experience with that kind of mindset, has your experience with other companies' tech support, you know, with the idea behind what your management is saying, well, if something goes wrong, we want to be able to grab somebody by the throat and have them fix it for us as soon as possible. Has that been a realistic experience for you guys? If something does go wrong, has the company that sold you the product, you know, been able to make good on their fix?
I can say in my case, yeah. I mean, we've had some come out same day within a couple hours to replace motherboards.
Okay, but
yeah,
that...
Man,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in the environments I've worked in, it's generally been a lot more hardware stuff where, you know, we needed the support contracts, you know, hardware failure, and then we had the hardware guys down, like, in the day next day or two to get that crap resolved, but... Generally, I don't see it with software because it tends to be Microsoft, and nobody wants to pay for the Microsoft, you know, support contracts. But management has that, you know, feeling that if they need that support contract, they can get it.
All right, because I've seen that a lot too. I mean, the hardware stuff, support contracts with hardware, great. You know, they'll come in that same day in some cases. You know, you call up like Cisco, and they'll ship you that part out that same day. You have it the next day. Or maybe a few hours later and you're good to go. But, you know, the software end of it, you know, you might be able to have somebody to reach out and grab by the throat, but that's, you know, not always a guarantee that it's going to be fixed or ever be fixed.
Right.
So it's kind of a, I don't know, a bummer. Because I could see, like, some of the Linux... And software developers that I've worked with within the community, you know, you send them a bug, and, you know, they'll fix it for you within a few hours, which is an incredible turnaround compared to some companies where they want, you know, core dumps and they want to, you know, make you jump through all these hoops and do all this stuff to get some more information from you, and then 3 weeks later you're still waiting for a fix. Pat?
I mean, commercial companies, you know, they won't come out with a patch for, you know, 6 months, 9 months.
Oh, that's certainly true. I think you're speaking to the choir for the most part.
Yeah, pretty much.
So what are we looking forward to in the future of Gentoo here? I mean, is it going to be still just plugging along and keeping up the packages, or do you have any, big plans for some directional changes in the distribution?
I tend to think there's a lot of big plans and a lot of ideas being tossed around right now, and no real idea at the moment which one of those are actually going to happen. They're just too early to tell. There's a number of people trying to write, you know, better, faster, stronger package managers. There's an attempt to figure out how to get more community involvement. All of these things are likely to happen. You're going to see a lot of improvements, but I can't say, well, this is going to be the next one down the road.
Was somebody chiming in there with something? Or?
Yeah, I mean, one thing in our community, the attempts to be that, you know, it's, we tend to be a lot less, I guess, you know, directed by one person. It tends to be developers, you know, think something's neat or, you know, something catches their fancy and they go and they work on it for a while. We don't really have any guys going, you know, setting like a course, you know, that this project or, you know, this thing needs to be implemented, you know, for the next release. It tends to be people working on their own teams go, you know, we need this. Let's do it.
All right, so it almost seems like the whole project's kind of laid back. People, you know, working on some of their own stuff. It comes all in, you know, in the end it comes together and this, you know, this diversity comes together to form a unique package. so to speak. That's based upon the individual user's choices.
That's right.
It's like the ultimate freedom.
Yeah. We do our best.
You do a damn good job. Damn good job.
Thanks.
So now you are a physicist there, Grant. Are you do education or are you actually work for a company?
I've done both. For a while I was a college professor and now I'm working for Halliburton. I'm in their nuclear physics division.
Ah. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. And Mike Cummings, you have the web serving farm, correct?
Right.
Now, is that your own company or do you work for a company?
No, I'm a government lackey.
Oh, you're a government lackey. Is that really frustrating working for the government or has it been a positive experience for you?
That's kind of a tough question on a live podcast.
There we go.
Turn your screws.
It's been a positive and enriching experience, and it's opened many doors for me. There we go.
Well, that's an honest as you could possibly be there. I guess is security like really, really one of the top priorities over there in your end of the business there?
Yes.
Because I know there's a lot of press comes out about the government not being as secure as it should be, and but I hear from a lot of people that security is a number one priority by the government.
Speaking of just my little part of it, we work our butts off to make sure it stays secure. We haven't had a break in a long time, and I mean that like in 10 years.
That's cool. That is cool. He must keep you busy, really busy. So how do you guys find time to work on the Gen 2 project? Because, it seems to be a lot of commitment that you must have.
I think we all just steal it wherever we can.
Now, do you guys...
Yep, pretty much by the grace of my life.
Do you guys also go out to the different shows, like trade shows, like Linux World, OSCON, stuff like that? Do you guys go out there and advocate for Gen 2?
We do the Linux World stuff every year, for sure. OSCON, I think it's if we have, like developers in the area and we get invited or whatnot, we'll probably show up. But it tends to be more just, if there's somebody in the area who has time to do it, whether or not it's going to happen. Not too many developers can just, hop on a plane and fly out to whatever location.
Right. So then, are you guys members of your local Linux user groups, too?
I'm an idle member. I mean, if something catches my eye, I'll participate, but... I wouldn't say I'm an active member.
All right. Now, Gen 2, for how great it is, and you guys obviously use it as your main, I would assume, your main workstations at home. Do you have family members and friends using Gen 2, too?
My wife uses Gen 2 on her laptop.
Ah. Does she maintain it herself, or... Do you help out with that?
I generally help out with that.
Ah.
She's not really interested in maintaining it, just using it.
She just now. What desktop do you have her running with that?
Usually XFCE.
Ah, that's good. That's a nice desktop environment.
I've been pretty happy with it.
Now, what about you? The other two guys there. Are you guys? Getting your friends and family on Gen 2?
No, my girlfriend, my family, they tend to be, you know, video game players or, you know, they just don't really know anything about computers, so I can't really convert them.
Okay. Yes, now's the time to try harder. Take away their video games. Get them a DS, a Nintendo DS. They'll never want to go back to their other video games.
We already got a DS.
Oh, it's too
bad. Just hard to run Steam and Wine.
Yeah, I understand that. That's one of the sticking points I hear a lot with people trying to get people over. You know, people using Linux is it doesn't run the games that they wanna play.
Yeah, I think you know id and Epic have been doing a really great job getting their stuff running, and you know I make sure to you know pick up those games because one I really like playing those games, but you know two those guys are you know giving us native Linux ports.
Right.
But you know when some of the other bigger names, I think you know Valve and Steam and the stuff that they're doing through Steam tends to be a really big sticking point just because the popularity of those games.
Right. What we need is a really popular multi-user. Oh wait a minute. Oh man, now it's slipping my mind. What is
MMORPG?
Yeah, MMORPG to be ported over native to Linux, like maybe
Postal 2.
That's not an MMO.
I know.
No, but something like yeah.
World of Warcraft.
Yeah, like a native port of World of Warcraft. That might increase. I hear a lot of people say that, man. If only World of Warcraft was on Linux. Do you guys play that? Play a lot
no,
of games?
No, I don't believe in MMORPGs.
Don't believe in them, huh? To you, they don't exist?
Yeah.
That's probably a smart thing.
I just don't have the time, I'm afraid.
You're too busy with Gen 2. I mean, hey, when do you find time to have any free time? If you're working on the Gen 2 project, that's gotta keep you extremely busy.
Sleep less, drink more Mountain Dew.
That's it. Now, how often do you guys update your systems there? I mean, is it like a nightly build process for you, or do you just like do it weekly?
I've got all my systems cron job to pull down the portage tree and, you know, notify me of updates, and then whenever I hop onto the system, you know, I'll go through the updates, but for my desktop, I have that pretty much. I run off of CVS and such.
Okay. And you, Grant, you keep yours regularly up to date?
I've got a couple of different machines, and so some of them get updated either daily or every other day or so, and then some of the machines that my Myth TV, for example, gets updated about once every 4 or 5 months when I decide I really need to.
Whew. Does that take out your Myth TV for a while?
No, it works pretty well.
Huh, okay. How do you like Myth TV?
I've been very happy with it.
That's a pretty damn good project. And, you know, I don't hear a lot of people running Myth TV on Gen 2.
I've actually heard people using it on Gen 2, and they like it a lot, yeah. They say it's pretty easy to maintain once you get it up and running.
Yeah. And I would assume it's not that difficult to get it up and running under Gen 2 with the portage system.
No, we have one developer
who... It's easy
to
install.
You
want
to go?
No, go ahead. I was done.
All right. We have like one or two developers who works, who like that's one of his main things is, you know, Myth TV. And so he tries to work, I guess, a lot with Upstream to get things resolved. So I found Myth TV tends to be, you know, pretty stable, usable. And if I have any problems, I just go bug the guy who's supposed to be having it running properly. And he usually knows the answer right off the top of his head.
Oh, that's cool. Myth TV is a fantastic project. There seems to be a lot of interest in Myth TV in the community. Fun stuff. Anything else you guys like to add about the Gen 2 project to bring up, you know, as we're running out of time here?
I'm actually going to have to go, but let me say thank you very much. I very much appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you coming on here, Grant. I thank you very much. Keep up the fantastic job you're doing.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Mike Cummings. Did you?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you say, did I hear you say you're part of the project is you maintain GCC?
No, I think that's Mike. Yeah, the Mike you're thinking of.
Mike Freisinger.
Yeah, that's me.
You maintained, that must be a lot of work there, maintaining GCC. Did you say you also pick up the slack on some of the packages of projects that don't have a lot of interest associated with them?
Yeah, that tends to be my shtick.
Because, you know, I hear that a lot with distribution, and one of the complaints in the free software community that people criticize it, saying that there are projects that come down the pike that are critical but don't have the kind of same interest level that maybe working on the GIMP or a game or some other, you know, flashy type application. So you're one of the guys that picks up the slack when that occurs.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty true in Gentoo as many other distributions. As nobody really wants to work on it. They just want it to work. And if it doesn't work, you know, they'll sure to let you know.
Yeah, I got to beat them around the bush. Now, do you guys, is your involvement in maintaining projects, I mean, do you have to, like, in a sense, herd the cats here? Has it been a little difficult trying to get people to contribute to, with what they've signed up for, or has it been, you know, somebody has come up and said, I'm going to be working on this, and they've been pretty true to form and been pretty responsible? Has that been your experience?
In general, I think that, you know, developers, if they, you know, do flake out, they tend to do it rather quickly. So, I mean, it's not like they pop in for a week. I mean, you know, they don't pop in for a while and then they just disappear. It tends to be, if, you know, somebody's going to be flaky, they tend to show up pretty quickly. So if we try to bring a guy on and, you know, a week later we can't get a hold of them, or, you know, they're just not doing anything, you know, we generally don't tend to hesitate to, you know, go ahead and retire them for them.
All right.
I'd say the recruitment process helps with that, too.
Yeah, I could see that. You're getting a... You know, with how difficult it must be to you know, get in there and prove yourself to the Gentoo developer community, to flake out, is probably not as a rare occurrence, would you say?
Not really. Absolute flake out?
Yeah.
So your process weeds a lot of those people out from the get-go, which is good. Just good. Anything else you guys want to add tonight?
It's all for me.
I appreciate you guys.
I was going to tease... Oh, sorry, I think I have a little bit of a lag. I was going to tease Alan about building this TV from scratch on a Slack box, asking what the difference between that and running Gentoo was. But other than that, thank you for having us on tonight.
Alan's afraid of Gentoo.
I told him he should run Gentoo. This is Pat. I told Alan that he should just go with Gentoo. He says he likes compiling. I told him that would be perfect for him.
I'm just more comfortable with Slack. I'm sorry. It's what I know. I'm afraid of change.
That's actually
what
why
can I say?
On Slack.
I'm afraid of change.
You know what? If we put enough pressure on him, because he used to be originally running Red Hat. So if we just keep badgering him, he'll come in.
Eventually, I'll come in here with a Gentoo installed.
He'll come in here with Gentoo on his laptop and a Myth TV running Gentoo and Gentoo on his toaster. And he'll probably install it on his wife, too.
Well, that could be fun.
And they'll have it'll be a whole Gentoo household over there. But, you know, I want to thank you guys for coming on tonight. I appreciate it. You guys do a phenomenal job on the project, and thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule, and hopefully someday we can touch base with you again.
Cool. Thank you.
And good luck with everything that you're doing, and we'll talk to you later.
All right. Take it easy.
Good night.
Have a good one.
Night.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Dan, with your fruity apple sounds.
In the future, we should probably get one, maybe two people on.
No more than that, man.
Because what ends up happening is everybody ends up not knowing when to talk.
Everyone just like is gun shy.
And we don't know who to direct a question to. And you ask something and everybody waits and then you sit there for a little bit and then somebody tries to answer and another person tries to answer and it becomes a cluster F.
Dan, that's what post-production is for. You're going to go in there and you're going to clean that up, aren't
you? And tonight is like one of the nights I do have absolutely no time to do post-production.
That's right. You're going to drive down to South Carolina?
Right.
That's a fun one.
Let me see if I can get a happy Link. Boy.
Well, while you're doing that, you mentioned you got Parallels running on your Mac. I tried downloading Parallels and installing it on my SUSE box, and it bombed out during the install. Apparently, there's the Parallels installer has an issue with newer versions of the kernel.
Awesome.
There was a kernel patch, and it doesn't install then. So it's up to the Parallels them to see whether or not they're going to fix it.
You know what?
Anytime soon.
I remember going to those.
Oh, there's Link.
Hey there, little lips.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, you are there.
You guys actually want to talk to me now for 5 minutes before the show is over.
Yeah. Pat was just talking about his experience with Parallels.
Yeah, it doesn't work on newer kernels.
I remember having similar issues like that.
It works just fine on newer kernels. It just doesn't like you, Pat.
Are you running Parallels?
I was running Parallels just fine on a brand new kernel on Ubuntu.
Oh?
Maybe it's the version.
Maybe it's the Pat.
It's the Pat. I know that. I remember having issues with VMware that.
It is a known issue.
Works here. Don't know what to tell you. In fact, I was running it this afternoon. This is my last day on the test version to run it. I might actually buy it because it really is good software. So,
how much is it to buy?
It's 50, right?
Is it 50?
I think
it's
so.
Bucks, I think,
up
right
until
now.
A certain point, and then it's going to go to like 79.
Oh, wow, man.
That's where Win for Lynn goes for 79, I think. Mm-hmm. Now, I did install Win for Lynn. I haven't had a chance to play with it.
Now, this Win for Lynn, that's strictly installing Windows, right? It's geared for installing Windows.
Yeah, it's for Windows.
It's, it's not like you could run multiple. No. Operating system somewhere.
No, I think Win for Lynn is built on QEMU.
It is?
I think so.
Really?
I think it is.
QEMU is dog slow in the emulator or the virtual machine class.
Well, QEMU, you have to remember, emulates a 233 megahertz machine.
Right.
Which is, you know, pretty slow by today's standards, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Dan's chair just came unglued.
Uh-oh.
All right, man.
He's on the floor.
he farted so many times, he killed the glue.
Oh, it's too funny.
Made it to the floor the hard way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like kicking back. I'm like, uh-oh.
Hey, gravity, a bitch. You know that?
Yeah, the whole chair broke apart. That's something.
Dan blew it apart. See what happens when you eat gassy food, Dan?
Ow, my toe. Oh.
What did I do with that? That was too funny.
Wait a minute. This chair was supposed to go out in the garbage.
Yeah,
I think you threw the wrong one
out. That's the one you always give me to sit in.
Yeah. Hold on, I'll be right back.
Dan threw the wrong chair out.
That's funny. That's too funny.
Oh, well.
So anyway, like I said, I got Win for Lynn installed, and it seems kind of slow. I wasn't that blown away by it, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
So I was bummed. You know,
what version of Windows did you install in it, though?
Was it XP Professional?
Maybe that's it. Is it, you know, just XP is kind of bulky, right?
You know, though, I've run it inside of VMware, and inside of VMware was pretty fast. So on the same exact machine, so go figure.
Hmm. You know what? That brings to mind that VMware really, really is... I don't think you can go wrong. You know what I mean? If you get VM Player, right, which is free, like you can't beat that.
And do the hack? You know about the hack, right?
Yeah, you can get all over the net. You can get like little blank images anyway. so that you can do whatever you want with it. But the cool part is, like, this is a free thing, and I'll tell you, after running VMware Player and Parallels, you know, to me, I think they range just about the same over here on my Ubuntu machine. So, you know, Parallels is it's a good program. I mean, I would support it $50, right? Parallels $50, VMware Player you can get for nothing. You might want to check into that, you know, if you're interested. In fact, this weekend, my father-in-law is getting a new, I'm sure all of you remember my, you know, dealings with my father-in-law's computer. Well, he needs a new computer, and he's still running his baseball game for Windows. And I won't install Windows for him anymore, so my only option, or his only option, is that he wants a new computer this weekend. I'm supposed to put it together for him, and I'm going to install his baseball for Windows game in a VMware Player, you know, virtual machine so that he can play that stuff. The only other option I was thinking about was going with Parallels, but, you know, that's another $50 for him. So
the problem with Parallels is I just posted on the RC. It's with the 2.6.16 kernel on SUSE. I don't know if it affects other distros. But what's the latest version of Ubuntu running now?
With as much noise as it's been 2.6, on here tonight.
It's 2.6.15, right?
Mine's running 2.6.15.25 right now.
Yeah, the problems with 2.6.16 are greater. Apparently, there was a patch that was put in to the kernel, and it causes the installer to go into an infinite loop.
Nifty.
Round and round, round and round, round and round, round and round.
Round and round.
So Dan, you got a new chair.
Yeah, that chair was rigged so that you would be killed on it, Pat.
But I narrowly escaped every single time.
I'm like the coyote to your roadrunner.
Damn,
my Acme chair blew up on me. You know what? I brought this chair up from the basement, and it was supposed to take that chair out and have it thrown out, and I don't know what happened to that. I had posted a question in the forum today, or an opinion, and, you know, I'll repeat it with you guys. Did you see that today?
Talking about Apple trying to sell Windows?
One of Apple's newer commercials with those two guys, you know, the PC and the Apple guy, they come up and the guy says, "Hi, I'm a PC. I run I run your Windows applications," and the Apple guy says, "Hi, I'm an Apple. I also run all your Windows applications." And they're obviously, you know, talking at this point about being able to run Windows on OS on Apple machines using Boot Camp, which is going to be included in Leopard, being able to run Windows on an OS or Apple machine, which makes me wonder if, you know, we've heard time and again Apple says, "Well, we're not going to support Windows. We're not going to sell Windows." But with that commercial and with Apple usually targeting the general population, saying how easy their systems are to use, how, you know, anybody can sit down, open up, you know, fire up an Apple and be working on it, to send a commercial like that out to the general population makes it really sound like they're going to be selling
pre-installed
Intel
Windows,
Apples with Windows.
Dual boots.
Right, because it flies in the face of all their other marketing with ease of use and all this to come out and say, "Well, yeah, you can run Windows, but you got to buy it, you got to install it yourself, you got to repartition your drive, you got to run through the Windows installation routine," which, you know, regardless of what anybody ever says about Linux, is I think a little more difficult, a little more cryptic than most of the modern distributions of Linux are, and then the post-installation stuff. I just really can't see it. You know what I mean?
What you're not seeing here is that Apple is probably the most brilliant company for marketing strategies that has ever graced the face of the earth. And I see this as another really great marketing strategy by Apple, because what they're doing is they're drawing Windows users in to their hardware. But once you get the hardware, the default install of the hardware is OS X, which looks better and runs better by default right off the bat than Windows does. So I think what they're counting on is that Yeah, the average, you know, the average Joe business guy or yuppie or whoever the hell might actually consider buying a MacBook or something like that for a computer because they're comfortable with the fact that they think they'll be able to run their XP on there or whatever. But once they actually get it and plug it in and turn it on, I think they're going to be hooked, man. There's nothing that the XP has or that the new one has, the new Windows is going to have, that Mac OS X does not have. You know, there's no reason to go back to XP if they turn their computer on and it has Mac OS X already running on it, and it automatically will open up their Word documents and their Excel sheets and their, you know, they can get their email on it and it looks really pretty and they can get their music and all that other shit. They're not going to want to install OS X afterwards. It's just going to sit there.
I kind of beg to differ with you on that because I know from experience with giving people...
You really
want to
have your XP, don't you, Dan?
No, with giving people access to OS X machines at work, there's been a lot of grumbling that they are not used to it. They are more accustomed to Windows. They prefer Windows because it's more comfortable to them. And OS X kind of confuses them. For even how well it integrate the applications integrate with one another and the capabilities that you have to do out of the box with a standard install of OS X and iLife packages with multimedia and general use stuff is fantastic. They're still really not comfortable.
Right. But let me make one quick point. How many of those people that have said that to you actually installed OS or actually installed XP on the Mac?
What do you mean?
Them would install it on the Mac. Like if they bought the Macintosh solely because they knew they could get XP on there if they wanted it on there, and then they turned it on, and even if they didn't like OS X right off the back and wanted to put XP on there, how many of them would do it? How many of them have the skill level to do it? Or how many of them are just blowing smoke up your ass? I think most of them are blowing smoke up your ass, and they just want something to complain about, but they would never, ever install XP to change it.
Well, it's still a marketing ploy, right? Yeah, but I mean, I see what you're saying, but I think at the same point that somebody looking at that commercial, you know, if they went and they said to Apple, I want to get an Apple that's going to have XP installed. I don't think people are going to look at this and say, well, I'm going to buy and install XP myself because, you know, generally people don't do that, even on PCs. They don't go out and buy a machine and install Windows on it.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I get the impression, you know, and that is the general consensus, that person's not going to install their own OS. Majority of people, and Apple's targeting, you know, sending out that message, it sounds like they're preparing to sell machines that are most likely dual booting with Apple OS X.
That's not what I get out. It doesn't sound that way to me. It sounds like they're using it as a marketing ploy. They're saying, yeah, we can quote unquote, can run all your Windows programs, which means like gamers and everybody, hey, come on over. We can run your stuff. You're able to install XP on here if you want to. But once they get it, they're not going to want to change from OS X because they like it, or two, they're not going to like OS X, but they're going to be, you know, the same as everybody else in the world, and they're not going to have the wherewithal to install anyway, you know, to install XP anyway.
But then I don't see that kind of person purchasing an Apple. If it doesn't have XP pre-installed, I don't see them getting any...
I think they might, but I don't think they might. I don't think they buy another one. But it all depends. If they buy one and they want XP on it but don't want to put it on there and they live long enough with OS X, it might grow on them too. You know what I mean? They're really, it's a no-lose situation for Apple. They don't have to install Windows XP on there. All they have to do is suggest that you can, and they can't lose with it. All they're going to do is gain another portion of the market share.
Well, I see what you're saying, and the commercial says that that Windows XP has to be purchased.
Right.
But still, I you know, from what Apple advertises, what Apple puts out, what the whole philosophy behind Apple, for them to put out a commercial like that, and not back it up with some product, I mean, I think kind of flies in the face. And I'm not talking about boot camp and doing it yourself.
Well, no, because they're, the next version of Apple's OS X is coming out with boot camp, you know, already working on it. So, it, you know, it's even easier than to install XP if you have it. But I think what they're betting on is that people will buy the computers thinking that they, you know, they'll just put their copy of XP on there, which is fine. But once they get it, they'll either become apathetic and won't do it, or they'll actually like OS X and won't do it.
Yeah, but you know what?
I don't think it makes any difference. Apple's still making money off the hardware. You know
I don't think Apple's stupid enough to do that, because something like that would blow up in their face.
I don't know.
They would have people buy these things. If they would do that, people buy these things with the expectation to run Windows on there and have to go through the same crap that people who want to run Linux on machines have to go through with trying to resize and repartition and do the whole install. It's just going to cause more frustration and catch a lot of crap from the general user population. And that's a negative publicity I don't think Apple would want to have. That's a mar on their reputation for being easy to use.
I don't know if it is, because it's already coming installed with a fully functional operating system. You know what I mean?
Right, but
they're not making it not easy to use because it doesn't have XP on it. You're giving them the option to run XP on it if they want to. They already have, you know, a good operating system on the hardware that's installed.
Right, that's what commercial.
People are going to end up using XP, or they're going to end up using OS X for a couple of days, and they're going to get into it. They're going to start digging it, and then the XP thing is just going to fall off the wayside.
Well, you know, again, I beg to differ, because I've watched people use OS X for months at a time and have come back and repeat that they absolutely do not like it. They would rather be running Windows. And for Apple to put out an ad campaign to target people where, you know, you might get a significant portion of people that would come back and say that seems almost a little ridiculous. It seems to me fly in the face of what their whole philosophy is behind their architecture and business process. I just get the impression that, you know, they're preparing. They're preparing.
The Linux Link Tech Show.
I don't know. I don't see Steve Jobs like joining the Microsoft camp and, you know, signing on with Longhorn or whatever, and want to put it on all his hardware. I just don't see it happening.
I don't see why they wouldn't. I mean,
make more money.
Yeah, they always proclaim to be a hardware company. I mean, they have a really good OS. What do they care whether they're shipping dual boot systems? They're still selling their OS. They're still getting it out there. But they're now, you know, they get to charge a little more for selling it with Windows, too, and get a kickback from that.
Bye-bye, BinRev.
I just don't see it happening. I don't see that cooperation between the two camps. I think as far as you're going to get is Apple's providing a method where you could run Windows on it if you wanted to. I think that's probably where it's going to stick. But, you know, I might be wrong. I might be full of shit. I am a lot of times, so we'll have to wait and see.
And you know what? Before people keep jumping on and saying I'm like John Dvorak, no, I'm not saying Apple is moving to Windows. I just think it would be advantageous in Apple's for Apple to include, you know, the option of dual booting with Windows. Because, you know, at that point, they're going to sell more products. And if they're dual booting Windows and OS X and giving the person the choice of what they want to use, you know, the only thing I could see that doing is they're selling more hardware, and eventually, you know, maybe people will be more interested in the OS X as compared to the Windows. It can only bolster Apple in the marketplace. The people, it's not Apple or Windows, Microsoft, that's going to be hurt in the end. It's going to be the Dells, the Gateways, and all that are going to take the brunt of it.
Yep.
And with that, play us out, Dan.
Alan's cutting you off.
Yeah, I got to get rolling myself. What's the deal with next week's show?
Okay, this is what the deal is for next week's show.
50 new people.
Technically, it's not a call-in show. What it is I have a list on the bulletin board right here where people can go on. If you guys want to come on and talk about anything you want to talk about, yell at us, tell us we suck, tell us we're great, rant about something in the news, whatever. You know, do a distro, shout out, you know, flame war, whatever. You guys can talk about anything you want. Go on to the bulletin board.
Patrick sucks or anybody else.
Anything. Link sucks. Alan sucks.
Tell me I suck, I'm going to poke the button and you're going to suck all by yourself. That's what's happening.
Anyway, go to the forum, check out the posting, add yourself to the link, and what I'll do is I'll contact you a few days before the show. We'll get your phone number and contact information, and we'll get you on. You know, the more the merrier, man. So this is your.
That's just, like a lot of fun. How many minutes are we giving each person, Pat?
It all depends on how many people actually sign up. So the more people, the less time you're going
to
have.
You'll have us trying to connect to you for 5 minutes, and we'll
cut
audio quality.
No,
what I'm
going
to
do
It'll
is
be five.
30 seconds to say what you want to say, and then we're going to cut your ass off so we put somebody else on, right?
I'm going to bring the phone, and what I'll do is I'll cue everybody up as we're going through it.
There'll be five.
No, we'll get more than five. I think we'll get more than five. So that should be fun next week.
And it'd be a lot of fun.
I think we're going to have to drink for that one.
I think you're probably right. We might need to drink.
Definitely some alcohol. And with that, some Frappuccinos.
Have to have some of those wireless microphones and hang out down on the porch and smoke some cigars, too, for that one. You
know? All right.
It works for me.
Frapper shoutouts?
Frapper, go ahead and do some Frapper shoutouts, and then I'll play Xanadu, right?
No. Alexander from Rush. Alexander Henning Drachman from Esbjerg, Denmark. We've got Kevin from the Northwest Territory up in the wilds of Canada. We've got Matt from Pickerton, Ohio. We've got Rich from Nashville, Tennessee. We've got Jeb Baldwin from St. Paul, Minnesota. Chris Blaine from Newport News, Virginia. We've got Bob from Cutler, Maine. We've got Peter Stutnow from West Des Moines, Iowa. We've got Eric Andrin from Uppsala, Sweden. We've got Lyle from Kansas City, Missouri. We've got Janik Bogukki from Ashford, England. We've got Casper Jensen from Aarhus, Jutland, Denmark. And that's that. We got an outgoing show. We didn't get to talk about net neutrality again, but it's a really hot issue. We do have a song.
What's a really hot issue?
Net neutrality.
Promise. Who's talking about that now?
It's in the news. There's another bill that they're pitching.
Trying to pitch through tomorrow.
Yeah, so it's big news. The song that we have relates to it. It's from a band called what's it called? The Broadband.
Yeah, Dan's got it up in front of him here. I don't remember what
the group is called. The Broadband. I heard the song on the Evil Genius Chronicles today.
God,
it's a pretty cool song.
Go Dave.
Very, very, very poppy song. Chick song. It's pretty cool. God save the internet.
God save Pat's mouth.
Good song until they start making God save the internet.
Oops,
so you
wrong
can expect
one.
That person at the end to be struck by lightning and be dead.
Alright, here we go.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Telecom Man, God save the internet. Don't change my reality. Keep net neutrality. God save the internet. All I wanna be is free to choose where I get my music and I get my news. Where I hook up with a creep or I buy my shoes. Don't bring me down. It's an old timey tale about a modern mess where some of them folks in our Congress wanna send us back to the days of the Pony Express. hope someone hears. Just ignore it and drink a beer. Don't believe the hype, don't buy the fear. She's a terrible mother, that Britney Spears. Must we remind you, it's election year.
God save the internet.
Tublink.
You guys are twisted.
That sounds like a GIMP project. Tublink. That would be.
Is that like Hotlink?
No, that would be like Tub Girl, but Tublink. Tublinc. Oh.